The Roaring Peacock Podcast.
Welcome back to the Roaring Peacock Podcast.
Welcome back.
Leeds United going to Wembley. Happy hunting grounds for a £170 million prize. Hello, we've been away for a while. My name's Adonis. You know me as at the Adalites on Twitter, or X it is now. It's very good. Hello from me. And joining us to discuss the final preview of the season.
Only preview of the season.
Prince of Darkness. Bele the Never. Bele the Never. You and Becca.
Hello. How are we doing, everybody? It's been a quick minute. It feels like it was only yesterday that we did the last podcast. It was about 6 months ago. So blame Donny. He's been relocating to England. And I've been extremely busy too. And to be honest, we thought you'd get bored of us. So we just had a little rest. And absence makes the heart grow fonder. So we're back.
Jesus, there's actually 20 people.
Shut the fuck up. Why? What have you got nothing better to do with your life? What is going on?
You remembered us.
Thanks, man.
Appreciate it.
Cheers. Means a lot.
So, Ewan, first trip to Wembley for 16 years.
That was last time. It was shit.
Yeah, Doncaster, League One, playoff final. Good memories of Wembley?
No.
In your life? Been twice, I guess.
Yeah, so I was just saying today that the only one I missed was the Charity Shield, which was brilliant, and we won. So maybe I'm starting to convince myself I'm the reason that we get beat or win. You know, that superstitious thing that football supports.
It's definitely all about you. It's not about the training, the coaches, the players.
No, it's definitely nothing to do with it. If I waste all that money and effort going to Wembley, we get beat. And if I don't go, we win. So that's my reverse psychology to why I'm not going on Sunday. There's a lot of reasons why I'm not going on Sunday, but that's one of them. Last visit to Wembley 2008, Doncaster, pretty much full with Leeds fans, even their end. Very few Doncaster fans there. Most of the people from Doncaster were there to watch Leeds because they've got quite a big Leeds contingent. And we had a pretty good team. And despite all that, we were absolutely shit. We just didn't turn up on the day. Lost 1-0 and I went missing for about 24 hours. So do
you remember much from the missing 24 hours?
Oh, no, not from that, not at all, no. I thought you meant from the weekend.
Sleep at all during that?
No, no. No. And then when me and my mate finally turned back up at the hotel, he set fire to the fucking cafeteria. We were that blitzed, we went down to, it was the early hours of the morning, we got in and the breakfast was being served, and he put his toast in this toaster, and it was one of them where you have to manage it yourself, kind of get it out. You know, one of them, and it stuck at the end of the carousel thing, and just set, so the smoke alarm and all the fire alarms started going off, and the whole hotel had to be evacuated. So, to be fair, they weren't really very pleased to see us. set fire to the hotel, brilliant. In the 35 seconds, it's been getting back in.
I've only been to Wembley once as well. It was 1996, well documented on the Roaring Peacock podcast, previous episodes. We lost 3-0. My mum cried.
Shit. That was shit at all. I was there as well.
Paid £5 extra for first class on the train. It was only £5 extra. Now it's like twice, three times, four times the normal ticket price. Loads of fans outside, sunny, glorious sunny day, beautiful day, heading down to Wembley and then got absolutely destroyed and then sort of miserable trudge back to Leeds.
Yeah, it was grim. I have something about going to London for a Northern. You get absolutely, like, you just forget yourself, don't you? And the 96 visit, I distinctly remember being out of the ground, heading back to, so my mate lived in... we had a few mates who actually were down there at the time and lived at Highbury Corner. And I sort of remember leaving and going back up to Islington. We ended up out in Islington that night, Upper Street. And I remember sort of leaving on 60, 70 minutes. But have you got what were the goals, times scored at that game? Because we seemed like we were out of the game from the first minute, but that's not the case, is it? But I remember being out of the ground at 70 minutes, I seem to recall, but...
I can get it for you in a sec. It's been a...
You're not very good at this, are
you? To be honest, I've tried to forget that game from...
Well, I've done a really good job
whenever
at
actually, the third goal went in.
Yeah.
So, okay. So Milosevic, that was a good goal, actually. Top corner, yeah. I think. We were right behind that.
Was, yeah.
Restrictive view as well.
That's the best way to watch Leeds at Wembley from
is
behind
it the stanchion. It was a big pole or whatever column in front of us, anyway. So Milosevic, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So it was 1-0 at half time. And then Ian Taylor scored and Dwight York. So Taylor scored 55 minutes, York scored 88 minutes. So maybe you left. Maybe you left after half time.
No, I think we left on 70 minutes. I think we were definitely 2-0 down. But it just we're never in the game. We didn't look like being in the game. I think it was one of them where he tried to experiment with the shape and the formation. 5-3-2.
Yeah,
and it just looked shit, and it never clicked, and we just looked crap, and it just didn't look right, and we got bored. It was a boring game for a Leeds fan because we didn't seem to have any. I don't remember us having any chances or looking like we were going to score, and so I think we probably under the influence of lots of other things in the mid-90s just thought, fuck this, let's go out and forget about football. But I've been to a couple of rugby games where Leeds have not turned up in the rugby league as well, and we've been out of the ground, so it's a bit of a thing, you know. You pay all this money to go and have a ticket and leave the ground on 70 minutes or
see, and I've
minutes.
Got I have the opposite effect of you, is that every time I go we win, so 3 or draw. I haven't seen us lose in 20 years, but I have been in Australia.
Yeah, I'm going to say you've been to 4 games. get this man a ticket for Wembley.
I'm telling you, 3 games this season. I should have calculated how much it cost me, like travel from Vienna as well.
Oh no, actually train fares, because you won't get on the plane, so that's even more expensive and more effort as well.
Who was scared of flying? Was it Bergkamp?
Yeah,
that's a famous footballer.
David Batty was. Yeah, absolutely. He never. He got the train and drove to a lot of European games. I don't think he got on the plane at all.
So
Bergkamp was the other one, yeah.
In good company. But yeah, I mean, even just on the membership and tickets, I paid over £200 for 3 games. But to be fair, I got my money's worth because it was 4-0 Ipswich, 3-0 Birmingham. That was my December trip. And then just came over and I luckily, very luckily, got a semi-final second leg ticket, got the scarf. What a day that was. That is, I mean... before I went to Australia, had 8 season tickets from 94 to like 02. Right. So massive games. I think the loudest I ever heard Ellen Road was the Deportivo quarterfinal of the Champions League. 3-0, and it was just the best performance, I think, at the highest stage. Those European nights were just really crazy. But that was right up there.
The Norwich game.
Norwich game. Yeah, performance and just the crowd, the atmosphere. It was bonkers. It was bonkers. And I think the only way it could have got better is if there had been a little bit of peril, just a little bit, to like just create a bit of tension, because
from
the start we were on it, and Norwich looked like starting an apprenticeship before scoring a goal, you know, like doing something bonkers. Wearing getting changed into clown uniforms or something.
We're gonna have to turn up like that on Sunday, aren't we? That's what you want, isn't it? I'm perfectly happy with no peril. I'm all right with that. You know, it was great just to enjoy it and watch it. And like you say, the crowd seemed to thrive off the fact that we could sort of enjoy it and lord it a bit and get a bit arrogant about the performance. And there was no question what the result was going to be. I think that was good.
I mean, we talk about it for years. It's like, oh, if only we could just, you know, have a nice, easy 3-0, 4-0 win.
Yeah, we've said it many times.
And then you get it, and then it's like,
this is shit. This is part of the problem. You Leeds fans are fucking mental. We're all nuts, aren't we? No, that was too easy. That was too easy. No, I'm not bothered. No, I'm not bothered. I wanted Norwich to score. Fucking hell, you mad. Even at 4-0, if they'd have scored, we could easily have lost 5-4. You know what Leeds are like?
It didn't feel right, you know, but it was amazing. It was really amazing. Right, Leeds in London. Can you guess how many... Okay, so 36 games we've played in London since December 2017.
Yeah.
Right?
How many games?
36 away games in the capital.
7 years-ish, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
How many wins? Out of those 36 games, how many wins?
Are you asking me now?
I'm asking you, yes. Yeah.
I'm right, we're trying
not asking stats because that would be pointless, wouldn't it?
You'd know straight away.
Yeah.
I'm going to hazard an educated guess. We know one for sure because it sticks in the memory as a roaring peacock, Fulham. I'm going to go for 3. Four.
Wow. You've nailed it. Play 36. Played 4, won 4, played 36, won 4, drawn 4, lost 28 times.
Holy shit. That's not a good record, is it? What is it about London?
And we've lost 9 of the last 10.
Jesus Christ.
In the capital. Trips to Wembley. Now, yeah. I really would need stats for this because I'm not entirely sure on, some of the extra competitions, but just like the main competitions. So FA Cup, League Cup, Charity Shield. I can't think, and then there's playoffs, obviously. Can't think of any other competitions that end up in Wembley. I mean, I wasn't looking through like Johnson's Paint or...
I don't think you'll find much there, to be honest.
The FL Vars or whatever. But we played 10 times at Wembley.
Data Cup Systems Final.
Right, exactly.
Systems Cup Final.
Yeah.
We won't got there either.
No. We've played 10. We've won 4. We've drawn 1. We've lost 5. And we've played there 3 times. Since 1974. So 1974 Charity Shield was the last visit to Wembley during those great years. And it wasn't Don Revy, was it? It was Clough.
Oh, was it? Oh, of course it was.
Wasn't it Clough?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was
during that 44 days. So that was the last time before 1992 when, of course, Eric Cantona scored a hat-trick.
Yeah, that's the one I missed, sadly. And also throw in the mixer. I know it wasn't Wembley, but it was while Wembley was being redeveloped. Millennium Stadium, Cardiff against Watford, right. Which was also shit.
Terrible.
It was awful. And that was another game it was a bit like that. That kind of reminds me of the Villa game at Wembley where, yeah, we were 3-0 down. I think we were down quite quickly from my memory and it just never felt like we were going to get back in the game. We did stay to the end, but it was red hot because they had the roof closed and it was boiling and it was like the atmosphere is different when the roof's closed in a stadium like that and there was nothing to celebrate from start to finish, very little. I'm not selling it well, am I? It was shit. We played shit.
I think it was at 5 or 6 a.m. in Australia. So I'd had to get up at that time. I think I'd had to get up at 4 a.m., something like that. We went down to a pub in Brisbane, and it was just horrendous. I don't know if you've ever been awake at 5 a.m. and watched Leeds lose 3-0, but it was just terrible. You have to be awake for the rest of the day then.
when you go to Cardiff, you have to get up really early anyway to get there. And I was flying out to Italy the next day. So I didn't get in until about 2 in the morning. And had to be up at 5 to fly to Italy. So I was in a really good mood.
Right, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, at least you got to, I suppose I got to leave the pub and be in Australia and be in Brisbane for that day. So, I mean, that's probably better than being in Wales. No offence to Wales. Actually, we're basically Team Wales, aren't we? So we can't say anything.
I had to sit in a van for 5 hours or whatever it was it took us to get back from Cardiff with three lads, one of whom spent the entire journey pissing into a bottle next to me. So, yeah, I'd take Australia over that all day long.
It's one of those stories you can smell.
I can't. It's literally like a scratch and sniff story, definitely.
That's terrible. Right, so record in... the four wins. The four wins at Wembley. 1972, of course. 1968, so both 1-0 against Arsenal.
Clark, 1-0.
Yeah. And we give them shit about 1-0 to the Arsenal, boring Arsenal and whatever. And two Charity Shields, 1969, great number. 2-1 Man City, and the one we talked about before, 4-3 Liverpool. So playoffs. Mm. Playoff history. We've got a fantastic history on the playoffs as well.
Yeah, 5-0. Well, so far, should we pack this in? I'm sure we've all got better things to be doing. How many people are still watching? 3.
66, apparently, but not that many on YouTube. So I don't know where they are. Maybe Facebook. Let us know in the comments where you're coming, where these 66 people are watching
where
from.
Where you're watching from and why you've got nothing better to do.
Facebook, Twitter. Playoffs, play 5, lost 5. 1986-87. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Charlton.
Yeah.
Lost 1-0 at Selhurst Park, 1-1-0 at Elland Road. So it went to a hastily organised replay. They actually didn't have a plan if it ended in a draw. So they went to St Andrews. It was 0-0 at full time. Leeds went 1-0 up after extra time, and there were goals in the 117th and 119th minutes.
Daggers to my heart as a 16, 17 year old lad. Yeah, 16. Yeah, that was 16. Fuck you know. Yeah, that was painful. And it's not got any better since. It's got worse since.
I think it was the inaugural playoffs that had never happened before.
Yeah, I believe it was the first. Yeah.
The start as you mean to go on, Leeds United.
We've ended that
05-06 Watford. We covered that.
Yeah, shocking.
07-08 Doncaster. Covered that as well. Yeah. Only appearance at the new Wembley, by the way.
Mm.
The Doncaster, the arch. And 08-09 versus Millwall. Lost 2-1 on aggregate.
Forgot about that. I've obviously blanked that. By this time, I'm starting to blank them from the memory.
There's a certain amount of self-correction being done. The brain is like, no, we don't need that. That's just going to hurt you.
Shut it out.
Delete. And... 10 years later, 18-19 versus Derby, and more difficult to delete that one. I think
that went well. Yeah, I think it's the image of Lampard and all them tossers who played for Derby at the time, walking around the pitch doing the fucking all that nonsense and shitting in the changing room. Probably left an indelible mark on us all.
Yeah.
Dirty bastards. Anyway, that went well for them, did it?
Very well, very well. Where are they now?
Oh, they just come back up, haven't they? I don't know about Paddy's. I think he's a professional. Doesn't he advertise QuickBooks or something on the telly? That's what he does now for a living.
Is he? I was betting that he's either going to go one of two ways. He's either going to be the next England manager, like just fail upwards, or he's going to have some kind of nervous breakdown and enter punditry or.
Well, put some money on him being the next Chelsea manager, because the people they're looking at the moment, he's not out of the question, is he? So you get rid of Pochettino, who obviously took a while to settle in, but was doing really well towards the end and got him six. They get to six in the end, six or seven, whatever. And bringing in the likes of Maresca from Leicester and Kieran Maguire, which, you know, fair enough, but I don't think he's ready for that kind of move.
McKenna. The price of football.
Yeah. Well, he'd probably be a better option, to be honest. Yeah.
Well, they are a money club.
Yeah, exactly. At least they know how much they were losing every week. There was the other one they've mentioned, something else like proper left field one. So, yeah, I mean, Yeah, I wouldn't be against. I wouldn't bet against Lampard being next Chelsea manager.
Well, it's weird. Company's off to Bayern Munich, it seems like. Ooh. After getting relegated. It's weird.
Yeah. What is going on? There can't be that many good managers in the system, can there? That must be it. Because why? What's Company done? I mean, I know he did well in the Championship last year, but again, with a very expensive squad and not a particularly competitive Championship.
Well, the other thing is, Thomas Tuchel, like, Bayern sacked him. Mm. But when it was clearly the Harry Kane Spurs curse that did for yes. him, it had nothing to do with Tuchel. Nothing. Everything he should never have bought Kane. Never buy a Spurs player.
No, brings it with him.
Especially not when they're from Spurs. Right, previous meetings. September the 30th, Southampton 3, Leeds 1. And May the 4th, Leeds 1, Southampton 2.
That was good.
Can you remember back to September?
Yeah, of course, yeah. But another game we were out of. I've been to St. Mary's, right? And it was the game. You know, my memory's all over the shop generally. But
do you know you had to have.
Smith got sent off.
You had to have bought one Southampton ticket.
I know.
And been a Southampton member and bought one ticket to be able to buy a ticket to the final.
Unbelievable.
There are a lot of Leeds fans who couldn't get an away ticket. So paid the £20. £20, by the way. £65 my membership was for Leeds United.
That's right.
Southampton's £20. 20 is plenty. If you're listening, Angus. and of course, they went to the Leeds game. And so they qualified to be able to buy a ticket for the playoff final. Ridiculous. Anyway, sorry, interrupting you.
No, I was saying, I've been to St. Mary's. That's another fucking long journey as well. And we got beat 4-2. I think it was Smith got sent off. And again, we were out of the game pretty early. And again, I had a very debauched night around London that night. I don't know, there's a theme developing here. Should stop going to watch football anywhere near London. What we said. So, yeah, the 3-1 early in the season. Again, we were out of the game like immediately, weren't we? There was no... Yeah, the goal was a consolation goal, and they played really well, to be fair. There was a couple of contentious refereeing decisions, I believe, but the upside of that, of the stat you've just given, is that both teams who've won the League Two and League One playoff both got beaten in both the home and away leg of the league game. So the playoff final was between a team who'd been beaten twice and obviously the team that had got beat twice throughout the league season won both playoffs. Oxford against Bolton and whatever the other game was, the insignificant game from League Two that I can't remember.
That's a weird stat, that.
We're about to break it out. We do that a lot, don't we? Only to go, it will be the only team who, we'll break that.
Yeah, only team who won the away leg, the first leg, the away leg, against Derby, and then didn't go on to at least the final.
Good at that.
Lineup that day, Sam Barham left back, Liam Cooper, Pascal Strout, Jamie Shackleton. So very different back four. That we sort of went into the run-in with when you think about Firpo, Rodon, Ampadu and Archie Gray, and that kind of itself, that lineup in the last half of the season, especially the Ampadu-Rodon centre-back partnership, which as soon as we changed to that, we looked incredibly... We didn't look like we were going to even concede a goal from open play. I think it was... three goals we conceded in about 3 months or something like that at the start of this year.
That's right, yeah.
Now I just want to show you some of the goals here. Let's see if we can get the technology working, because sometimes it doesn't.
It's been a while. This is where it could all go wrong.
It could go wrong here. It could. But first goal. Oh, this was May. Sorry. Let's go back here. So first goal in September, as you can see.
Everybody blamed Cooper, didn't they? Because he was running off the back of Cooper all the time. And I don't think he played a lot up to that point, because he played Cardiff early in the season, didn't he, at home? Scored the equaliser and then went off injured. Possibly the first game he'd played again. He started after that.
Well, you can see what Cooper's doing. Cooper is trying to, there's obviously a plan to play the offside trap when there's a through ball like that.
Yeah.
Except, unfortunately, Byram didn't go. I actually thought Byram was excellent for most of the start of the year, but one through ball and a good finish. So that's something they've got to watch out for. Mm. Here's the second goal.
This looks familiar. Guess what? We didn't track Smallbones running the fucking game at Elland Road either. Amazing. I don't think we've learned very much. Looking at that and his goal at Elland Road, which we're no doubt going to move on to. I think we can give some work to do.
Right. So there's an issue here with tracking runners. So as soon as a runner comes past your zone, that runner needs to be picked up. So Cooper needs to come out here.
Tommy Cooper.
And Glenn needs to push up here and block this run, because there cannot be that much space and a free man there. I mean, it's pretty basic defending.
I think he's got two passes on there, really good passes. He's got the guy stood at the edge of the area.
Yeah,
Armstrong, and he's got and he's got the human thumb moving through the field. I mean, you can't miss the fucker, can you? I better not say it, actually. I was going to say something which I'm now not going to say.
No, there's no editing in the live stream. That's the problem with that. And here is the third goal. And it's really just something that I guess shouldn't really happen. But I don't want to single out Byram too much, because he was fantastic for a large proportion of the games at the start of the season. And we seem to sort of get a little bit better before this game, and Southampton hadn't won at home for three games before they played us there. And then it was just a couple of mistakes, so the offside trap, and then here. It's really, I mean, how he scores from here, I've no idea, but basically he turns Byram inside out and then chips it over Melier from an acute angle, and unfortunately Strout puts it in trying to get it clean. So
guess it might be something to do with Melier.
Right.
An awful lot, but
It's something that, I mean, you would expect Melier to save it, but again,
They played really well that day, and they blew us away a little bit in the first, you know. I think that kind of Cooper coming back in, and there was a little bit of disruption in the formation, I think, just didn't help, and they started quickly and got on top of us.
Yeah, it wasn't working that back line. At the start of the season, there was massive disarray as well. People were coming and going. We didn't know who was going to play. We didn't know who was going to go out on loan. There were players who had said that they wanted to stay, and then they got a loan offer and went. And there were players who wanted to sue the club if they didn't go. And of course, Nonto had his head turned as well. So it was all a bit divisive. Of course, we'd had the takeover, so there was a lot of exterior noise, and you can imagine being in the changing room at the start of the season, just thinking, what is going on? Who owns the club? Who's going to be turning up in this room next week? Who am I going to be playing alongside? What am I doing? Is this a place for me? You know.
So it's the only place for us, apparently.
Right.
But you know that. You know what I was going to say is that I'd all be fine and quantified brilliantly as usual. But we were no better in fucking April when all that was sorted. It was shite, weren't we? I mean, people talk about bogey teams. I'm a big believer that, despite my Prince of Darkness tag and kind of title, that I think Southampton's the better game for us, because I think they might come thinking they've got one over us and they'll beat us. And we've got something to prove, and I think Leeds are always better when they've got something to prove. So let's see.
I think so too. Yeah, I think so too. I remember going on BBC Radio Leeds after that away performance at Southampton and just saying, how have we got such low energy? How did we put such low energy into that performance? Because it was mad. They weren't tracking back. They weren't rushing forward. So when you don't put the effort that much effort into getting into those positions in the transitions, then you end up neither going one way or the other and just staying sort of in the middle, you know what I mean? And not getting to your players. You have to be on it in this league. And they were extremely motivated and we just weren't. Was it lunchtime kickoff, maybe? I don't think we do very well at lunchtime kickoffs.
It was an early kickoff, the away game. I can't remember that whole game. I think that was both early, wasn't it?
Yeah. I think, yeah. Was it the last one? The last one, yeah, wasn't it all... They were all played at the same times, like 12:30 or something.
Yeah, I think the away leg was 12? The away game was
early
as well.
So that might be to our benefit as well, because we'd never really play well in the early kickoffs. I don't know why that is, but we seem to play much better in the afternoons and the evenings, in the night games. Right, 4th of May, Leeds 1, Southampton 2. Do you remember that one last?
I remember it better than the 4-2 away in 2002 or whatever. Yeah, sure. Similarly, did we start okay? Did we score first? Oh no, they scored. We equalised, didn't they? I think.
Yeah. So terrible start, I think, because we'd just missed out on automatics, and it was such a psychological blow to get that many points. And
I think the thing that you remember from that game is the marking for Smallbone when he sort of came through unchallenged, unmarked, nobody blocked him off, nobody tracked his run. And then the first goal, was that Armstrong? Did Armstrong suffer? But again, there was no marking, was there? There was just literally... So there.
I've got it here.
Thanks for that. I have nightmares about that graphic. So... The fact that you've got, four or five players that are totally unmarked in our box.
Yeah.
Look at Melier's positioning. I mean, I'm not being funny, but fucking hell. He's not giving himself much of a chance to get across, has he? I find it odd that you've got a team that went 3 months without conceding very often and, you know, kept so many clean sheets that's your setup.
It's poor. Yeah, it's really poor.
Really poor. And I think it was a game where you kind of felt
second phase. So that been a problem for a couple of seasons, but their corner came in, we cleared it. They got it back in the corner, and then that is the position. We don't seem to be, or we haven't been very good for a few seasons, including under Bielsa, at being really organized at set pieces. And, you know, there are some coaches that drill set pieces over and over and over ad nauseum, and there are other coaches that don't spend that much time on them.
Yeah. Well, wait, where's Andy Hughes now? Is Andy Hughes at Southampton?
Andy Hughes.
Because he's actually a set piece coach for some team that we played towards the end of the season, so it must have been Norwich. Right. I think it was Norwich. Is it Norwich? Yeah, he is, yeah.
Because what was his name? That guy from Spurs we had... I did a thing for set pieces a little while ago.
Chaz and Dave, probably knowing us. Yeah, we made a late move for Chaz and Dave to become set piece coaches at Leeds United. They might as well be, because we're fucking awful at them, both in defensive mode and attacking. I think we've been better this year, to be fair, than we have. We've scored more from set pieces than we have previously. But like you say, where we lose the ball on a pitch has a massive impact on whether the other team do well in regards to getting really good chances against us. That's a great example. And I think that, just really quickly on that.
I just want to say, I just want to stop your enthusiasm, because I know that, you know, you're normally the cynical one. So it's time to be cynical again, because we came bottom three for set piece goals. I think we scored 6 or 8 or something like that in the season. And of course, I think we're still looking for a goal from a corner, right?
Did we
score against Cooper? Norwich? I can't remember. There were lots of goals against Norwich.
Ampadu scored in the cup, didn't he, against Peterborough from a corner?
I'm talking about that. So we scored against Ipswich. It was a Strouk header. That's basically, in swinger, I think Peru headed it first. It got parried. Yeah. Strouk nodded it in. And that's the last time I'm pretty sure we scored direct from a corner. I think it's over 150. So
As stats, it's going to be like bloody Scooby-Doo at the end of this, where we peel you off and
right.
I would have got away with it if it wasn't for you meddling kids, and the fucking stats will be underneath your body.
It's because we didn't. Here's another angle of that, and it shows another Southampton player free on the edge of the box.
Melier, though, he's still probably angle wise level with his fucking near post. What the fuck's he doing?
It was bad. The thing is, we just lose our heads on the second phase.
It's not just Melier, though. If you've got 7 players in the box and not one of them's marking, you've got a problem, haven't you?
Yeah. Lost
any level of football.
It's just disorganised. There's no plan, you know. That's what I'm talking about, drilling these things ad nauseum so that you've got a plan so that when it goes out, you know, your keeper on any level will hopefully go, get out, push up, or whatever. And you know, as lads in the box, when it gets cleared, you have to push up. Of course, there's an offside trap, but you have to get positionally set for in a nice defensive structure. But we never seem to be able to do that for the last few seasons. And you can see the panic has sort of created this. You know, they've gone over to this guy, the number 10, and all of these players have been drawn towards him. So it's they've been ball watching, essentially.
Well, I think you learn that when you're about 8.
Right.
There's no excuse, is there?
So that was the first goal. That's something to watch out for.
Well, and then let's hope we don't see that fucking absolute nightmare again. Jesus. Yeah, this was awful.
So here's the second one. And what happened here was not getting back defensively set and being lackadaisical, especially from Junior, because it was one long ball over the top.
Yeah.
They all thought it was going to go out.
Going out, yeah. That's right, yeah. Including Junior, he'd switched off completely, hadn't he? He was on the beach.
Yeah, but you know who hadn't switched off?
All the Southampton players. All of them. Every single one of them.
Because they might as well. That's the way that you play these games, is you have to play the percentages. And if there's a chance that your man is going to get there, then you've got to be open and opportunistic. For that opportunity to come anyway, turns him inside.
Once again, I'm blaming. You can't criticize the kid all year, but Rodon there, if you want, yes. I mean, he's got to come across and block that channel.
That's
off.
Correct. Yeah.
And he's ball watching, and Kamara's almost going towards the ball, and Ampadu's going towards the ball. Which I get Ampadu, he's got to go and sort of help Firpo because Firpo's done. But Gruev reacted far too late. And how Rodon hasn't spotted that run and gone across and just blocked him off, or do what he did for quite a lot of the season, which is get a block on it or throw himself at it and put his body on the line. He's beyond me.
Yep. So this is the earlier frame, actually. And you can see, basically, I've highlighted the yellows. And I realise that we're going to put this out as a pod. And I'm extremely sorry to anybody listening to it, because you're not going to get these visuals. But basically, just go to YouTube and watch the video, because it's going to be much better. But I've put yellow markers on the Leeds players who have made some mistakes here. And we don't want to single anybody out. But Rodon, probably... if he's our player, I'd say he'd be a good shout for player of the season generally. But
100%, yeah.
As we've said before, you know, the psychological blow of not making automatics, and then this being they were tired, they played 50 games or whatever, absolutely knackered at the end of the season, and they knew it was basically a dead rubber. But still, Rodon needs to be closer here. Rodon and Byram need to shuffle over. Junior needs to bust his gut because he's just jogging back thinking the ball's going to go out.
Yep.
Glenn and Ilya, who was unbelievable against Norwich, just like absolutely outstanding. And Glenn, who's been good at times throughout the season, hasn't blown me away with consistency. But both of those guys, they need to be back goal side of these players. Anyway, so it's one long ball over the top.
You look at it there, there's no threat. You've got enough players there to you know, man to man.
Yeah.
You've got, you know, Kamara should be on top of Smallbone, and, you know, Ampadu can step back to Armstrong, and Rodon can, you know, and Gruev should probably go across to the 10, if not, like you say, Byram shuffle across. That's probably getting a little bit narrow, but there's plenty of time. When you look where the ball is, there's another, 3 or 4 seconds before it cuts in. to get back and get goal side and organise. But, you know, I mean, look at fucking Melier again. He's like doing, he's breakdancing. He's fucking breakdancing, right? So he's organising nobody. He's not shouting at anybody and going, right, get, you know, cover that.
Yeah,
know,
yeah.
That, he's not doing it. And that, this is true. My big thing with him. I think he's done brilliant this season. He's made some amazing saves. And the one against Norwich that could have changed the game if Sargent had put that in at 2-1, you know, down the day. He's been brilliant, but his lack of like organisation and discipline and focus and concentration is beyond me. Mm. And I'm not even going to get started on his distribution, but yeah, he's not shouting and organising anybody there, is he?
I think the thing is, like, you've got to put his career in context. So he conceded over 150 goals in two Premier League seasons, you know, with under managers who were not defensively minded and didn't take adequate steps to protect him, and also didn't have the squad. But Bielsa, it was all out, all or nothing with Bielsa. It was all out attack, and we loved it. Yeah. But that didn't help Melier. And God knows what Marsh was doing.
Well, Jesse Marsh didn't even get him. He wasn't even coaching him. He was just letting him go out there and do his thing. Pure vibes.
So you've got to think, young lad, he's still very young. He's not going to be, you know, one of these like chisel grizzle experienced keepers who's, you know, sort of Nigel Martin type, who's going to be yelling at people and organising them. It's not going to happen.
I think you miss a massive... If you haven't got a keeper that's doing that, you've got a problem. At any level of football, it makes a big difference. I think so too.
And if you look at the stats, he's underperformed, really, from his expected goals conceded to what he saved. You know, he won the Golden Glove Award, but more or less, basically, because of that magic box of Rodon, Ampadu, and then whoever's playing defensive midfielder, whether it be Archie Gray or Kamara or Gruev or whoever it is. But that box, this one here that you can see, which is a bit disjointed at the moment, but that box has been the bedrock, the foundation of the defensive solidity that broke records at the start of this season. Anyway, it all went wrong here. And this is what we've got to be on the lookout for, because we've got to be focused every single... It's one game, you know. It's one game and anything can change it. But this is ridiculous. I mean, the worry
is that Wembley is huge. It's a big pitch. And it fucking... You know, the whole occasion, you know, drains your energy and your legs. And the worry is that there's going to be a lot of spaces if we don't... You know, if we're not up to it, we're not fit enough, and we're not working as a cohesive unit, there's going to be a lot of spaces. And they, you know, for all the criticism of Southampton, you know, the patch that they had, are going to exploit space, you know, massively and quite clinical. You know, they were clinical against us. I don't think they had loads and loads of chances, but the ones that they got, the good chances they got, they capitalised on. So that's going to be the concern, is that Wembley is going to be a lot more space and time and... potentially, you know, as people get tired, they're going to exploit it.
You look at these goals, I mean, every single goal that Southampton have scored against us, we've looked at today, and you can see that normally and under many other circumstances, these players wouldn't have allowed those goals, and it was our mistake, really. It was lack of energy to be in the correct place, or a sort of a lack of focus and nerve, sort of panicking from set pieces, for example, and not being positionally correct. I mean, here you can just—it's clear we didn't think that there was a threat from that long ball, and Junior Firpo's sort of attitude towards it of jogging back and thinking that it was going to go out was infectious, and it infected everybody else. Because I guarantee if he's running on and he's going, there's probably going to be a problem here, I've got to get there, then everybody else thinks, oh, okay, I've got to switch on too. So I'm not singling him out. All of these players needed to be in positionally correct. But that's the thing. They've been so good. We know they can do it. So when they don't do it, then we just have to highlight it. But it's something they've got to watch out for.
That's the thing about this season when we have underperformed. It has been a shock, and it's been one of those things where you've not seen it coming. I mean, the great example of that's a QPR game. Even though we were under the caution, we were struggling a little bit, you could see that. nobody saw that result coming. You know, that was a complete shock. It was like, bloody hell. Again, you know, you couldn't have predicted that scoreline. So when we haven't been at it, we've been punished severely. You know, and if you look at Ipswich, for example, I've watched them play a few times and they've not been great, but they've got away with one, or they've, you know, got an equaliser late on, or they've won a game that you shouldn't. We seem to be one of them teams where when we're great, you know, we're very good. You know, when we're average, we can't break teams down. But when we're poor, we get punished. You know, and that's just how it is, isn't it?
Yep. Right. Let's wrap it up then. Prediction.
Oh, fucking hell. Barney? Oh, shit. So, Woddy? I'm just waiting for somebody else to... It's really difficult. I mean, I've said all week, you know... It absolutely, based on what I've just said, it segued perfectly. It depends which Leeds turn up.
Yeah,
you know, if the Leeds that went on that run and played Norwich the other night turn up with the crowd behind them and that buoyancy performance, then I think we beat them. I've just got a funny feeling we beat them. If I had to predict, I think it's going to be tight. I'd go 2-1, possibly after extra time. But, of course, if the Leeds turn up that played QPR or some of those performances in the last 6 to 8 games turn up, then sadly, I think it's fucking hell, it's sitting on the fence massively, isn't it? But I think they beat us again. But, you know, nobody goes into these games expecting to get beat. You're optimistic, and I think, I'm expecting us to win. Not least because I'm not there. I can't be there. So knowing Leeds, having put me through loads of torture at Wembley and Cardiff and all the playoff games since 1987, they'll probably go and thrash him, but I'll be there in spirit, if not in body.
Yeah, so I'm pretty relaxed about it, which is odd. It's weird, but it's exactly how I felt before the Norwich game. And I know that I should be more nervous because obviously they did the double over us in the normal season. But I just have that feeling. I don't know. I think the times when Farkas had the time, a week or whatever, to prepare for a game, and they're all fit and they're all ready for it. And those big games, in those really big games this season, where there was sort of a big build-up to it and lots of focus on it and lots of momentum and energy going into it. If you think about Ipswich 4-0, if you think about beating Leicester, so double over both of those sides, and those were extremely big games because the only talking point really for most of the season was who is going to get those automatics. And it always seemed to be between Leicester, Ipswich and Leeds. So those games were absolutely massive. And the way that these players stepped up in those big games, I think shows an edge to their character that I didn't see in other teams that we've had in previous years where we rattled them off, but we lost all those playoffs. I think we've got big players for the big occasion as well. If you look at, you know, Jorginho, Somerville, Pirou, Dan James get stuck in. If you look at Rodon, Ampadu, very sort of
Archie Gray,
nothing phases him at all.
Firpo.
So, even Firpo, or maybe especially him. I think he can tend to switch off against the, you know, Rotherhams or whoever. But for the big games, he feels like a big game player within himself, and I think he steps up for those. So, my only concern really is. Is Melier set pieces just having one of those off days. But I don't think it's going to be like that. I think we're going to win. I'm really confident.
Yeah, and I think you touched on something there, that the games where we've really underperformed, you know, and people have accused Farker of this, and it's not an accusation I would make, but you know, he's relied on big players to get him through games. You know, that bit of magic from a Routerville particularly. But that's fine. If you've got those players in your army, then you're going to rely on them to do something magical, aren't you? Because they've got it in their capabilities. But I think that's the point. You know, and I said it to my pal. I said, you know, if for the Norwich game, he was saying to me, what do you reckon? I said, well, do you know what? We need them two to turn up. And they did. And I think when they turn up, we're a different team. So all you need, and I do think that we have got players in that in our squad that are big game players and playing at Wembley. I think we'll just hopefully inspire them to be the best version of themselves. So you're not, your Firpo, you know, he's one of the leading assist contributors in the league. And I think that, you know, funnily enough, alongside in the last few months, alongside Luke Ayling. So if we had them on either side, we'd be fine. But I think that you are going to rely on big game players like that. And I think if they turn up, we've got a hell of a chance because they haven't got any players like that. They've got a good squad and they play really, you know, they're committed to their system and the style of play and their identity. But they haven't got a Somerville, they haven't got a Routier on his day. And, you know, let's be frank, he's been really poor. And Somerville's been really poor for a couple of months now. And just need him to turn up. We've got a fucking hell of a chance to do something wonderful. And I think the reason why, you know, I always think, you know, there's a reason why you're not nervous. You know, the Norwich game, I wasn't nervous. I know loads of people said I should be a lot more nervous. Maybe, you know, when you've been to that many football matches, you've watched the team for so long, you kind of know in your deep down in your bones that we're all right, we're going to do this. So maybe that lack of nerves is because we deep down we know we can do it. But it's always, you know, it's the person who makes it's the mistakes on the day that win at Wembley. So let's hope we go into it with that mentality that, you know, it's all very well having big game players and exciting players, but, you know, don't give the ball away in stupid areas of the pitch. You know, take your free kicks. Don't. You know, Routier doing step overs 25 yards away from his own goal. No thanks. You know, Somerville giving the ball up or not taking somebody out when he needs to take one for the team. It's all those kind of things. You've got to get everything right, haven't you, I think, to go through in these big games. And I just sometimes think we'll lack that little bit of concentration at times, as we've just shown with the Southampton goal where we switched off. But I think there's a little bit of me thinks that a lot of Leeds fans think we're going to do it. And the other thing is, I think we're not that excited or nervous is because the reward's not what it was. You know, the reward of going back to the Premier League, you know, that was the panacea. We'd been out of it 16 years before when I went in, you know, to Bournemouth in 19. Like, it was, we'd been out of it a long time. We'd been really in the doldrums and gone right down to the bottom of then League One, Division One, or Division Two, sorry. It was kind of like you were clamouring to get back to the top echelons of playing football. We've been there more recently. We know what that looks like, and it's not great, you know, unless you can compete financially with those big boys. Watch the utopia for us in that division. And the other thing is you get VAR back, you get mercenary football players who come for money and to play in the Premier League and to advance their careers. So I think, you know, I think that the reward of being back in the Premier League isn't what it was for a lot of people, particularly people my generation, because you've seen it go from, you know, pre-Sky days where it was quite competitive and even early Sky days where there's a lot of money and it was very glamorous to what it is today, which is a bit of a joke, really. You know, with VAR and Man City, 115 transgressions against financial fair play.
Right, yeah, and state
football
buying.
Teams,
yeah.
Is it what it was? No, of course it's not.
I think when we finished ninth in that year back with Bielsa, if fans had been in the stadium, in the grounds then, I think we'd think differently about it. I think we would, because we'd have had that, you know, that very personal, joyous experience of our team finishing, you know, mid-table and having some great results, you know, but the games we all saw, the ones we got completely destroyed and had to watch, you know, Bielsa's legacy sort of, you know, die with a whimper in front of us, just horrible. And then Jesse Marsh just worse. If I didn't think it could get worse than watching, you know, Bielsa's team get dismantled and then him getting sacked. But watching Jesse Marsh ball was much worse.
What I said to you before, it can always get worse. Never say that as a Leeds fan. Can't get any worse.
So we do have actually 132 people watching. Wow. So thank you very much for that.
God bless you.
100 and something on Twitter, and there's at least Michael on YouTube. So it's nice to see some, Michael DiCaprio back on YouTube. Just win, can't do championship again, MOT.
Leonardo's brother there, big Leeds fan.
Right, yeah, yeah. Which
good Italian name, yeah, love it.
Yeah, yeah. Him and the Fonz get together and watch the watch games. Yeah, yeah. Just win, can't do championship game, MOT. So that sort of leads into what we were talking about, which was, well, to be honest, the Premier League's not that great either. But I do think we'll all win. I think we're a massive club. Obviously, I remember us being in the Champions League. We need to get back to the Premier League as soon as possible. And instead of, buying a whole bunch of mercenaries like you were alluding to, Mac, your sort of Brendan Aronsons, your Weston McKennies.
Yeah, fucking hell, maybe
we keep, we've got that guy from who did what, Nick Hammond did wonders at Newcastle, didn't he? So we've got him as a sort of technical specialist in the transfer market. I would like to see him be given Premier League funds and see what he can do with that, because his signings have been bloody incredible. If you compare his hit rate of signings to Victor Orta, who always said that only, what was it he used to say, only a third of signings are good or whatever. Well, yeah. Hammond's got one bad signing, I think. Was it one? I think it was...
Thinking
the right back, what's his name?
Christensen.
No, that wasn't that wasn't him.
No, that was Orta, wasn't it? Yeah,
God, the start of the season, it's been such a long year. I've moved country, it's been a really tough, crazy year dealing with immigration for my better half and all of that.
You bloody stuff. Europeans coming over here taking over all our podcasts.
Jed Spence.
Jed Spence, that's the one. Well, he wasn't a bad player, he just had a fucking poor attitude, didn't he? If he had a decent attitude, he'd have been great. I had hopes for Jed Spence. It's funny, isn't it? Football's a really fickle and quite transient game, because I'd completely forgotten about him. And I think when he was signed, everybody was like, wow, because he was great at Forest. When they got promoted, he was brilliant, wasn't he? And had high hopes for that sign. So I don't think you can put that on Hammond, because I think that should have been a great attribute, but he didn't work out for attitude reasons, did he?
Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, that was his worst, you know.
Yeah, that's not, but yeah, and he did have good games, didn't he? Those games where I thought he's going to be brilliant, this kid, but yeah, he was.
You got to give Orta a little bit of credit, though, just to give him a little bit of credit and cycle back a little bit, where it's due, because Somerville, fantastic, and Ruter as well, brilliant.
Yeah.
But it was just, I think it was just the timing of the Ruter signing, when we sort of desperately needed this this sort of 20 goal a season striker, and he's actually underperformed his XG worse than Patrick Bamford this season.
Well, he's not a striker. He's not. It's the recruitment. And I don't think that's just on Orta. I think there'd have been a discussion amongst others, Ramzani, possibly Kinnear, possibly the manager. I mean, I know Dan James is an example of a Bielsa player, isn't he, who didn't perform well, for us. So nobody gets off scot-free in that respect. And I think Ruter was so young. I mean, to pin all your hopes on what was he when we bought him? 19-year-old who's not a, I mean, it's clear from his strike, the way he strikes a ball, he's not a striker. And I think I'm not going to.
And his heading.
Lack of heading ability.
But let's be positive though. Barney's not here.
No, usually he keeps me particularly on the even keel when it comes to being a negative bastard. He's not here to temper that. So
Joe Rodon. I mean,
class, yeah.
The best loan since Benjamin White.
Easily.
And
I really enjoy watching.
Maybe even better than White.
I think different to White, but yeah, what he does and what we needed at that time was that kind of leader, that no nonsense, and he's been superb. And he's
Ampadu.
Yeah, great. Yeah.
How have we got him? 7 mil.
For 7 mil is brilliant. One of the things that are out there, aren't they? It's just the Orton had this thing about legacy creating, these players who'd go finding Europe and buy for next to no. There's players all around us, you know, look at the number of players at Chelsea, the squad that they've got, the players who aren't getting a look in. I always liked Hudson-Odoi. I thought he'd be a good player. I think he's come back to Forest at the back end of this season. He's done well. Mm-hmm. There's loads of good players knocking about, much closer to home, and probably a lot hungrier than some guy you go and pull from, you know, the distant parts of Europe, or, you know, Barcelona's B team or whatever. So, yeah, I think Hammond's got more of a sort of overview of particularly here and some of the continent as well. So, work out well for us. And that's the thing about, you know, if we don't go up, and I'm saying we won't, but if we don't, you know, you're probably going to lose some players that we've enjoyed and loved watching. And that's why you want to, despite the lack of appeal of the Premier League, you want to see Somerville go and do it again in the Premier League. You want to see Rodon sign for us full-time and Ampadu go and have a go at it for us in the Premier League. That'll be the disappointment. And that's the driver, I think, for a lot of those players and for the management team to think, look, we've got to get up because we want to build the momentum again. You know, we've got a bit of momentum behind us, haven't we? So let's build on it.
Yeah, I agree. Because, you know, you don't want to see Archie Gray, you know, sign for Liverpool for 18 million or whatever in the summer, do you? Because we can't go up, because we'll have to sell, because we owe 190 million in transfer or fees or whatever it was that Kieran Maguire was saying. And the thing is that all that 190 mil that we're going to have to pay for, you know, Victor Orta's mistakes.
Yeah.
To say that, because they spent a lot of money, which we're never going to be able to recruit. We're not going to get the, you know, even the 10 million for Christensen, we won't get back. 25 mil on Brendan Aaronson, you know. And if you look, compare Aaronson to Ampadu, I mean, that is miles apart. Compare Rodon to Diego Llorente.
Well,
another 18 mil that we'll never see.
That's the premium you're putting on those players you're dragging from the continent. And those mercenaries have been, that's the premium. You know, you look at Ritter for all his, you know, let's not say he's found his level. Let's say that he's growing up and he's maturing as a footballer. But how much 35 mil going up to 40 mil for a 19-year-old who's had one good season? I mean, it's fucking bizarre. It's nuts.
Yeah, so it was 28, but there was add-ons to take it to 35.
I think. I mean, it's crazy. He's 19. He's not done out. Dan James, 25 mil. Fucking hell. I mean, about the level they're playing at now and that they've done well, but it's the Championship. We bought them as Premier League players and they did perform, and that's why we ended up where we ended up. So, yeah, we've got to be better at that and not you know, ride that wave. And the other reason why we need to win on Sunday, of course, is Rishi Sunak's a fucking Southampton fan all of a sudden. So I think for once we've had the whole country behind us.
Right. Yeah, we had to get the Sunak thing in. And, of course, Will Ferrell won't be there.
Well, never mind. He
didn't attend 5 games.
Oh, of course, yeah. Anyway, welcome to England, Donny. I thought I couldn't let today pass without saying that obviously one of the reasons we've not been on is that the glue to the roaring peacock's broken toy has been moving and relocating from Austria to England. So welcome to Leeds, mate. It's great to have you.
Thank you. Yeah.
Hopefully we're looking after you.
Yeah, man. You haven't come and seen me yet, but I'll let it slide.
Oh, mate, I haven't got a fucking minute. Well, you've had half my mates working in your house, so come on, fucking hell.
That's true. Yeah, no, it's good. It's good. Great little spot here in West Leeds, by a park. People moan a lot about England and about Yorkshire. I've been away for 20 years. I've been all around the world. And let me tell you, it's a beautiful little spot you've got here, tell you.
We know.
Lush green, any kind of food, any shop, day or night, you've got culture, you've got art, you've got history, you've got great people.
Two-day summers are good.
Yeah.
You're a man
polite,
respond,
friendly,
you're a man who
northerners.
Doesn't respond well to heat, so you probably like the fact that it's a bit cooler.
Yeah, man. It's good. It's good. I don't mind the cold. I like hot drinks. I like, you know.
I don't mind the cold.
Nice scarves. Cashmere scarves and woolly coats.
May's a bit of a push. Cold in May. Fucking great.
But yeah, no, it's really good to be here. Beautiful old Victorian house, and yeah, it's just a lot of energy here, a lot of good people, a lot of energy, and I don't know, it's good to get out of Austria. I was complaining about it for years, so it's good to be back. NHS could do with a bit of help, couldn't it?
Well, election on the horizon, they might get it, mate. Getting rid of these fuckers, we might have half a chance, mate.
Yep, 4th of July. So make sure to register to vote, everybody. Even if you think it's a safe seat, let's send a message. It'd be really good. Either way, if you think it's the country's going great and being well run, you should also vote. I encourage you.
Check yourself into a fucking mental institution.
Righto. I'm going to say I didn't give a score prediction, did I? I'm gonna say 2-0. Somerville and no, I'm gonna say Archie Gray and Liam Cooper.
Shut
up. 2-1. Liam Cooper from a corner. Liam Cooper, last minute, the last chance this season to get a goal from a corner. I think we're over 150 plus now. I think it is. Unless we scored a goal from a corner against Norwich and I missed it because I was dancing too much. Right. Final thoughts, anything? Oh, what's your thing? Do you want to do that? A quick one? So many things.
Oh, a couple of things. So I went to a really brilliant restaurant, which... in Leeds last night, right, for my 19th wedding anniversary. I know what you're thinking. How the fuck's he managed that? Yeah, if you saw my wife, you'd think it doubly. I've done really well. I am punching to fuck. Batting well above my average, as somebody made clear on Twitter the other day.
Dodging the punches, at least.
Yeah. So I went to a beautiful tapas restaurant called La Taverna, which is on York Place in Leeds last night, and it was one of the best tapas meals I've had in a long time. So if you get a chance, guys, get yourself down. It's great. People are great. Great atmosphere. Food's brilliant. And it's in one of them bits of Leeds that after the sort of, you know, the city folk leave, it's a bit dead. So I always worry about places like that. Are they going to keep going? But it'd be a massive tragedy if that place went, because it's absolutely stunning. So that was one. And then, yeah, for those of you who know how vain I am, you know, with messing with my hair all the time and really worried about my looks, I'm having my fucking teeth. Can you see that? I'm having my teeth whitened. I look like I had some sort of fucking stroke then, didn't I? So I've had my teeth whitened. So, yes, a very drunk dentist made a stupid proposition that he'd sort my teeth out for now, because I've had a few knocked out and a bit of trauma. So
tell this story about your tooth falling out.
Falling out? It didn't fall out. It was fucking encouraged out, let's say, politely. I used to have a really bad habit of falling out with bouncers quite often. So on one occasion, a bouncer asked me to leave the pub and then asked my tooth to leave my mouth, hitting me in the face a number of times. And the funny thing was, I got my tooth knocked out, and I thought, that feels weird. I can feel my gum. Where's my tooth gone? And then my mate went, it's there. And it was on the floor. And it was covered in, like, you know, fag butts and bits of gravel and stuff. So what are we going to do with that then? He said, I'll put it back in. Get a glass of milk. So we had to go to a bar, get a glass of milk, believe it or not. So I ordered, like, two cans of Red Stripe and a glass of milk, which is the weirdest order I've ever done still to this day.
Two cans of Red Stripe and a glass of milk, please.
Just to wash it down with. And then... Yeah, put my tooth in this glass of milk, stuck it back in, so it was physically being out, you can see it's fucked, and put it back in, and it stayed. So I remember being out that night and drinking like this. I was sort of going, because I dared swallow fully, because I thought I'll end up having to pick my own tooth out of my own faeces, which is never a good look.
Wow.
It's a very glamorous story. You can see why my wife married me now, can't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I stuck the tooth back in, and then luckily I played football with a dentist, and rung him and said, can you open the surgery on Sunday morning? As I woke up with my pillow covered in blood, completely forgot I'd had my tooth knocked out until I went like that, and it literally went backwards and forwards completely. And yeah, he glued it, and it stayed in there to this day, but it leaves me with a slightly discoloured tooth, which is why said pissed dentist said, I can sort that out for you, and I'll do it for now if you can go to Huddersfield. So me being a tight Yorkshireman, fucking 2 days later, I was outside his surgery. And in the meantime, he sold me some, well, sold me, gave me some trays and some gel to make my teeth white. I'm not even sure if it's working, to be honest, but hey,
Wow.
How can you improve this? I mean, come on. What cosmetically can you do to this fucking boat race to make it better? I don't know. Answers on the postcard to the Rory Peacock.
I can't believe that your tooth got knocked out and back in.
With gravel on it and a couple of cigarettes, I think. Yeah, it was fucked. It was really bad.
And what was this process of, like, did you dip it in the milk or did you leave it?
You dip it in the milk and leave it a bit.
Right.
And then you put it back, force it back into your gum, the hole that has been left.
Soak in milk and force back into the gum.
And apparently it recalcifies you. When I've told people this, you know, it sounds like a really tall story. It's bang on true. People are like, fuck off, that's a joke. And even the dentist said, oh yeah, I've heard that before. Funny enough, the lad I was with, he had all bottom three knocked out, and he did the same, not on the same night I hastened to add, but he went, oh, I've done this before, them three of me, and they came out, and I've had them back in, stick it in milk. And it was funny, because we went to a club, people will know it, older generation will know it, Cosmos, the Phoenix in Chapeltown, that later that night. And we knew the guy that owned it, and obviously my tooth was dodgy. He was like, what's going on with your mouth? What's happening? Why, you know, why are you drinking like this? Why are you being weird? And he said, come back in the office. And he says, what you need is Tia Maria and milk. I'm thinking, fuck, this is getting worse. It's like, you know the drinks that Del Boy orders in Only Fools and Horses, like Baby Shaman Cherryade and fucking Lucasade and whatever. It was one of them. I can have a Tia Maria and milk, please. If you order a Tia Maria and milk, and that really helps, I'm thinking, this is getting worse, man. It's getting more contrived. But that is genuinely the same teeth, knocked out, back in, glued together the day after, it's still there, bless him. So when this dentist said to me, I can put a veneer on that and use it as a porcelain veneer if it doesn't catch up with the whitening process. I said, no, I think I'll leave it because it's a good talking point, isn't it? Why have you got a weird tooth? And then I tell him that story and everybody leaves the room.
Right.
Taxi!
Reminds me of this Hunter S. Thompson quote, which is, it's something like, he's trying to make a case for a professionalism. And he's saying, you trust in citizen journalists and I'll trust in citizen dentists. But it seems like it actually worked for you. I'm flabbergasted. I feel like I should give a disclaimer by saying, you know,
kids,
this is not health advice. Or
no, don't do this. Don't try this at home, kids.
Right.
Don't fight with bouncers, particularly when you're outnumbered significantly, and don't try and stick your own tooth back in your head if it gets knocked out. In fact, just be a nice kid. Don't drink too much. Drink responsibly.
Yeah.
And, you know, do your homework, listen to your mum and dad, all that shit.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you go. So my thing was completely different. I went to the Race, Equity and Social Justice Conference at Leeds Trinity Uni and the launch of the Race Institute.
That's a switch in tone, isn't it?
It's a switch, yeah. It's definitely a switch, yeah. From getting your tooth knocked out, shoving it back in again, to trying to improve and to the life of minorities in the UK by eliminating institutional racism and injustice. So yeah, well, I was really impressed by it. There's lots of data. I think the thing is that people will say, you know, the classic thing, deny that the UK is racist. Maybe because they are unaware of it, because it doesn't affect them, or because they don't want to think of the UK like that, or because all of their friends, like none of their friends are racist, they don't know anybody and they've got a little bubble about it. But it's very real. There's a lot of evidence. They're doing a lot of data. I mean, they are looking at 30,000 teenagers in Bradford and doing a cross-section, and it's not just black people that it affects. Of course, working class people have worse outcomes in education and health as well. So it's also, there's also a massive class issue in the UK. And there are people who are trying to isolate the issues, see what possible solutions there are, and to attempting to implement them on a sort of community-wide levels. And what I found these people really inspirational, to do with, you know, town planners and people who were, you know, directors in the NHS and government lobbyists. So I came away from it very hopeful, basically. So that was my thing. And then I always give something to watch. So Sugar, that's my recommendation. I really enjoyed that, especially if you like film noir and you like the sort of the history of kino. It was really good. Right.
Very cultural. It? Well done. You upped the ante and the cultural content significantly from my thing. So
right.
Well done.
Right.
Well done for that.
The podcast literally fell out of your mouth and I
picked it back up and
wiped
stuck it back
it down.
The, yeah. Stuck it in a glass of milk and stuck it back in again.
Perfect. Well, extremely rusty, but it was good to do a pod. And thank you very much to the 159 people watching, mostly on Twitter. Incredible. And we will... I don't know when we'll see you again. But
I'm going to give a shout out to my nephew, Alex Ainsworth, who, bless him, asked me the other day when it was his birthday, so I was saying happy birthday. He said, when are the Peacocks back? When are the Peacocks back? So one of our most ardent fans has been missing us and his family, and I just wanted to give him a shout out. So, all right, Alex, keep watching, mate. Thank you.
Come on, Alex. Come on, Leeds.
Come on, Leeds. Let's fucking do them.
I'll see you down in London if you're going. I'll be in a pub somewhere, probably. Unless I can get a ticket. So if you hear about a ticket, turns up sick. Send us a message. Come on, Leeds!
Enjoy it.
Wembley! Wembley!